to be necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be delving into the latest veto by North Carolina Governor Josh Stein, who earlier this session vetoed a permitless carry bill. The session has pretty much ended. I guess lawmakers are going to come back maybe, you know, a couple of days at a time to work on budget issues. But right now, I mean, it's going to be tough to override the governor's veto of permitless carry, because there were a couple of Republicans who voted against that measure, and in the House, and the Republicans are already one vote shy of a supermajority in the House. So you need some Democrats to cross over or at least be absent from the chamber. And I don't know that that's going to happen. This, as disappointing as that is, I got to say, this is even maybe even more disappointing. Although I think its impact is going to be more limited than the denial of permitless carry. This from the News and Observer. North Carolina Governor Josh Stein vetoes bill allowing private schools to let teachers carry guns. So, you know, many public schools, you've either got dedicated campus officers or you at least have a law enforcement presence that is, you know, reasonably close. I mean, I live in a rural county in Virginia. We have a sheriff's deputy that is generally stationed at the high school, which is maybe a quarter mile away from the middle school. I don't think there's a dedicated officer there at the middle school campus. Don't believe that there's one on the campus of the elementary and primary schools. But again, the sheriff's department is probably 10 minutes away. That even 10 minutes can be an eternity, though, right? If you've got somebody there at the school doors or somebody who's gained entry to the school and they want to do harm to the students or staff inside. Public school districts, again, at least have the option of having a campus police force. Private schools don't have that option. You can't get a sheriff's deputy stationed at a private school, typically, right? You're not going to have a uniformed police officer serving as a school resource officer for private schools, unless you're, I guess, willing to pony up the cash to pay for that. And for a lot of these smaller independent private schools, that's simply not an option. So House Bill 193 in North Carolina would have permitted employees or volunteers at private schools to carry firearms or stun guns on school grounds, so long as they had received written permission from the school's board of trustees or administrative director. They would have had to have a concealed handgun permit. They would have to have completed an approved training course. The bill also would have required schools wanting to allow their employees to carry handguns to adopt standard operating procedures for possessing and carrying firearms on school property and then distribute that to the parents of students. So parents would be informed here, right? This wasn't about trying to keep parents in the dark. One of the supporters of the bill, Representative Jake Johnson, said in a committee hearing back in April, "What we're hearing consistently back from educators in our districts and also people over private institutions is something is better than nothing. If there's a bad situation going on, someone who's qualified is better than nothing." Well, apparently not to Governor Josh Stein, who says nothing is actually better than something. In his veto statement, Stein said that House Bill 193 would, quote, "make our children less safe," and argued that law enforcement officers and school resource officers who go through extensive training to protect the public should not be substituted by school teachers and volunteers. He said, "just as we should not allow guns in the General Assembly, we should keep them out of our schools unless they're in the possession of law enforcement. Law enforcement officers receive more than 800 hours of public safety education, including firearms training. On top of that, school resource officers receive additional training and know how to respond to crises and de-escalate conflicts, a requirement I supported when I was attorney general." Here's the thing. As I said, that's not an option for these private schools. They don't get to have school resource officers provided by the state. They don't get to have law enforcement officers provided by the city, county, or state, because they're private schools. So their security is up to them. And Governor Stein has said, no, nothing is better than something. Now, as for the 800 hours of training, notice, by the way he talked about that, right? Law enforcement has to have 800 hours of training, including firearm training. Yeah, they don't have 800 hours of firearm training, right? I don't know what the standards are in North Carolina, but firearms instruction is a small portion of the instruction that cadets go through in a law enforcement academy. And frankly, if you're talking about armed school staff or armed volunteers who've been trained and vetted They don't need to know how to arrest somebody. They don't need to know how to conduct a pit stop, right? They don't need to know how to do all of these things because they're not law enforcement. House Bill 193 did not give these teachers or volunteers the power to arrest anybody, the power to search anybody. It gave them the ability to serve as a first line of defense if someone comes through those school doors wanting to murder little kids. That's what the bill did. That's what the bill does. And that's not good enough for Josh Stein, who supposedly is pro-choice, right? Except when it comes to giving private schools, parents, educators, the choice on how to ensure that their schools are safe. Now, I mentioned permitless carry earlier and the struggles that it is likely to have when it comes to a veto override. Things are a little different, though, with House Bill 193. As the News and Observer reports, there were a couple of Democrats who actually crossed over and voted in support of this bill in the Senate. And in the House, one Democrat who voted against the bill said that he has changed his mind. Representative Shelley Willingham told the News and Observer after the vote on House Bill 193 last month that he changed his mind after hearing from private schools in his district about the need to have an option for school employees to be armed. Willingham is a retired police officer. He says he personally doesn't, quote, necessarily want guns on campus and knows what they can do. But he says that he supports giving private schools that may want to have an armed employee on campus the option to do so. And he told the News and Observer last month that if Stein vetoed the bill, he would vote in favor to override the governor's veto. So it looks like the votes are there in the Senate to override Stein's veto on House Bill 193. If Willingham sticks to what he told the paper last month, there was one Republican who voted against House Bill 193 in the House. And then Willingham voted against it, but says he would change his vote, right? So I think that leaves us still one vote shy of a veto-proof majority. But I think with a lot of pressure from, again, parents and educators, with a sustained campaign from his colleagues, I think it is possible to convince that Republican who voted against the measure to change his vote as well. It was Republican Representative Mark Pless who was the one who voted against the bill. So, I would say at this point, if you are a constituent of Representative Pless in North Carolina, contact his office. They explain again, this isn't about arming people willy-nilly, right? This isn't about putting guns in the hands of untrained individuals. But what Governor Stein says should happen is an impossibility for these private schools. They cannot have a dedicated school resource officer in place. They cannot have law enforcement on campus whenever students are present. That's not an option. And as these educators said, as these lawmakers said, as these stakeholders said, something is better than nothing. Do you want to be, I would ask Representative Pless, do you want to be the one to explain to parents, to teachers, to administrators? Yes, there could have been somebody there to stop this attacker. But I thought your kids and your school would be better off having to wait 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 minutes for law enforcement to respond to an active shooter. Is that really what you want? The Governor Stein had said, there was a person last year who left a gun in a bathroom at a private school. We've seen active duty law enforcement leave their guns behind, right? I mean, that's not something that is related solely to people with concealed carry licenses. Was that a mistake? Absolutely. Is that justification, again, to put every kid in a private school at greater risk of harm from an active shooter? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, I mean, we knew that Josh Stein was anti-gun. He was the Attorney General of North Carolina before he was elected governor. He was a reliable friend to the gun control group, signing on to any number of amicus briefs in support of gun control laws across the country, not just in North Carolina. But to me, this isn't even really a Second Amendment issue. This is a school safety issue. And what Governor Stein is doing is basically creating keeping in place a two-tiered system where kids in public schools are more likely to be protected by a good guy with a gun than kids in private schools. Because the governor does have the option to allow that. And he's just said no. So we'll keep an eye on what's going on in North Carolina. Again, I would encourage constituents of Representative Mark Pless to contact his office. Even if you don't live in Representative Pless's district, I mean, I'd be nice. I wouldn't be a jerk about it. But again, I would frame it exactly the way I said. Do you want to be the one who's responsible for telling these parents, for telling these administrators, for telling these students? Yeah, I think you're better off having to wait for police to arrive rather than having somebody there on campus who could stop an active shooter if they walk through the door. Do you really want to be the one to deny these schools the choice, if they want, to allow for this practice? And hopefully we can get Representative Pless to change his mind, just as Representative Willingham did. All right, on to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Ohio, where three Toledo teens who were on probation are now accused of a murder during an illegal gun sale on Independence Day. There is a lot to unpack there in that headline, so let's delve into this. Two 14-year-olds and a 17-year-old were arrested on Monday for the murder of 17-year-old Jason Bennett back on July the 4th. According to prosecutors, Bennett was killed when the three teenage suspects were allegedly trying to sell a gun to Bennett and at least one other individual, but then robbed Bennett and the others involved there. Toledo's WTVG says the teens faced a judge on Tuesday where they pleaded not guilty to charges of aggravated murder, conspiracy to commit aggravated robbery, three counts of felonious assault, discharging a firearm and tampering with evidence. And the TV station reports that it was during that court proceeding on Tuesday when it was revealed that these suspects were already on probation for various crimes at the time of the murder. The teenager, I guess the 14-year-old, who is actually 13 on Independence Day, so he just had a birthday, according to the TV station, had met with his probation officer just a couple of hours before Bennett was shot and killed. And because of his age, he cannot be tried as an adult. But prosecutors say that they're looking at a specific youthful offender classification, which would allow the courts to impose basically two sentences, one in juvenile court and then another when he turns 18. The other 14-year-old suspect was already on probation for allegedly stealing a car. And prosecutors said that he had cut off his ankle monitor and was scheduled to be arraigned on an escape charge at the time of the murder. Now, again, I don't get this. We've talked so many times before about these GPS monitor devices, how they don't actually monitor people. So this 14-year-old steals a car and is put on probation, right? No juvenile detention or anything like that. No. We're just going to release you back to your guardians. But you got this ankle monitor, and you got to keep it on you so we know where you are. You got to check in with the probation officer. He cuts off the ankle monitor. Apparently, he's apprehended at some point, right? Because he was scheduled to be arraigned on an escape charge. Why didn't they just hold him in custody? He has proven at that point that he cannot abide by the terms of his probation, that he does not want to abide by the terms of his probation. So, yes, I understand that the juvenile justice system is supposed to primarily be about rehabilitation and non-incarceration. Cool. Sounds like this kid needed some incarceration to help with his rehabilitation because an ankle monitor wasn't enough since he cut it off. So why was he out on the street? WTVG says that the 17-year-old was also on probation at the time of the deadly shooting, but it's unknown at this time what their other alleged crimes were. But again, all three of these individuals already known to the criminal justice system, already opportunities for the criminal justice system to take these teens seriously. And to take their, unwillingness to abide by the terms of their probation seriously. And the criminal justice system simply failed to do so. All right. On to today's armed citizen story from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Not actually too close. Virginia's a big state, so this is actually is not too close to where I live. Sheriff's office, a Churchville homeowner finds man in house, holds him at gunpoint. This was in Augusta County, so in the Shenandoah Valley area, western part of Virginia. It was July the 5th in the town of Churchville. Shortly after 10:30 in the evening, the Augusta County Sheriff's Office responded to a 911 call reporting an active break-in. The Sheriff's Office said that residents discovered an unknown man inside their home. The homeowner was able to retrieve a handgun, confronted the suspect in a bedroom. The suspect then jumped through a screen door and reportedly tried to steal a vehicle that was parked outside. But when he couldn't do that, he then tried to flee the property on foot. The homeowner actually ran after him, didn't shoot him. That would have been a crime at that point. This guy's running away, right? So the homeowner's not in fear of death or great bodily harm. But the homeowner pursued the individual and then held him at gunpoint in an adjacent field until deputies arrived. 19-year-old Gianni Colavita of Stanton, Virginia, was taken into custody without further incident. He is now facing felony charges of burglary at night, possession of burglary tools, climbing into a vehicle to commit a crime. I had no idea that there was even a criminal charge in Virginia, possession of Schedule 1 or 2 drugs, as well as misdemeanor charges of destruction of property and petty larceny. He, at last report, is being held at the local jail without bond. Augusta County Sheriff Donald Smith says, "Well, we always urge citizens to prioritize their safety and contact law enforcement immediately. I commend the courage and composure this homeowner displayed in a very dangerous situation. This incident serves as a reminder that responsible firearm ownership can play a critical role in personal and home defense. When used lawfully and safely, firearms can be an important tool in protecting one's family and property." And the sheriff is absolutely right. You know, again, had the homeowner shot Colavita as he was running away, the homeowner would have faced charges. If Colavita had turned and attacked the homeowner as the homeowner was chasing after him, the homeowner would have been within his right to protect himself. But that's not what happened. Like the vast majority of defensive gun uses around this country, the trigger did not have to be pulled to stop that crime from escalating any further. Suspect taken into custody. He's unharmed. Homeowner's unharmed. And again, hopefully, the defendant will face justice there in the Augusta County court system. Mario the Rooster hopes so as well. It's been a couple of days since we've heard from Mario the Rooster. He's been hanging out in bushes because it's been so rainy here, but we've had a brief break from the rain, and yeah, he's out on the porch saying hello to everybody. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, much to Mario's disappointment and hopefully yours as well. But we'll be back on Monday with more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Mario might be with us too. I never know. I try to shoo him away, but it doesn't always happen. In the meantime, though, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, as I said, from across the nation and even beyond. We've got some international stories, too, including what Canadian officials are calling an attempt to overthrow the government in Quebec. Yeah, that's a bizarre story. Anyway, we'll talk to you on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free. Free as Mario.